Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the Doom Patrol podcast, which is all about the Doom Patrol and waiting for the Doom Patrol occasionally, which, well, we're still waiting. It gets longer and longer at the moment. Yeah, let's face it. Anyway, we're going to talk about the Doom Patrol to pass the time while we wait for the Doom Patrol. So,
yes, this is true. Hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at avantgarve. You can reach us via email at waitingfordoom@gmail.com or on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. You can also check out mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com for some awesome posts by our fellow Doom bro Doug Zavisha. And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and Podbean.com.
Podbean.com. Sorry. I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks. And you can also get in touch with the Sentient Show Twitter account, which is Wilfred, who's at WFD Pod. And we are sponsored by Comicosity, which is an amazing site for comics news and information.
Yes. And this week on Comicosity, I was very interested by an interview that Aaron Long did with Marcus Sedgwick and Thomas Taylor about their graphic novel that's due out this week called Scarlet Heart Monster Hunter. And it's kind of got a Michael Avon Oeming look about the art. And it's kind of a Cthulhu-esque 1920s vibe about this young woman or young girl, Scarlet, who goes monster hunting as a member of the Royal Academy for the Pursuit and Eradication of Zoological Eccentricities, which also becomes the acronym Trapeze, which is awesome in its own right. But yeah, it's a really interesting article about the guys coming together, and it's got some sample artwork there. It looks a lot of fun. I'm getting a bit of a kind of like a Tintin vibe, bit of Tintin with was a girl and it was more of a gothic feeling to it. A little bit of Leave It to Chance, except she's more of a monster hunter in this one. So, yeah, it looks really cool. So, check that out on Comicosity and check Comicosity out for lots more comic book love.
That's that looks like it's out this week from First Second.
Yes, yes, April 3rd. So, by the time this hits, it should be on the shelves. Yeah.
Ah, cool. Mm. Cool. I've never heard of that. It looks great.
Looks very cool, good doesn't one. It? Yeah.
Good one, Comicosity. Mm. Anyway, how was your week in comics, Mike?
I read some comics, Paul, and I know you're excited for me because I read trades.
Ooh.
I read Volume 2 of Mother Panic, Volume 2 called Under Her Skin, which had a really interesting villain whose costume was like a Gotham Police Department body bag. Which would be like the easiest and creepiest cosplay ever. So there was that.
Did he just lie there?
No, he walked around and he had guns and everything. He was really creepy. Volume 2 of Justice League of America, Curse of the King Butcher, which I really enjoyed for a strange reason because Steve Orlando had a character called Maxon, who is like this human guy who grew up in Monster Valley. His family, you know, perishing as their plane crashed there. He was raised by dinosaurs and monsters and that. And Steve Orlando, curse you, and I tip my hat to you, you had me thinking that you had just brought back some ancient DC character that I'd never heard of before. But no, it turns out Orlando had created Maxon, but it felt like a DC character from an earlier time, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Sort of a Commandy vibe. So,
Commandy vibe, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, he did references to the Bloodline demons earlier in this same trade as well. So, and you know, Orlando loves a bit of his DC history and that. So I'm thinking, oh, cool, I don't mind this Maxon character. I'm going to check him out, see where he's appeared beforehand. Because Volume 1 of JLA had the Extremists, who, again, were new to me. But as you pointed out last time we talked about them, they've been around for a while. So there I am thinking, oh, yeah, Maxon, he'll be an old character. Nope, Yeah, the other one,
twists with the character, aren't there?
Yeah, yeah. And the other trade I read, I've actually had for a while, but I finally tracked down the second volume. So I dove into volume one of Fear Agent by Rick Remender, about an intergalactic bug hunter, you know, alien hunter. And it's just this breakneck speed stuff. He uncovers a conspiracy to destroy Earth, and then he's, yeah, all this stuff happens to him at an unrelenting pace, and it's very action-packed. So that was cool fun. It was good to finally get through some stuff that had been in the reading pile for a while and some new additions to the reading pile. So, yeah. Plus, I found my reading pile from my old place now that I'm unpacking in my new place still.
Did you do a reading pile merge?
I did. I did. I have a giant reading pile once again.
Excellent.
How's your week in comics and such been, Paul?
Well, I turned 50 recently.
So congratulations. Again.
My little birthday. Yeah, I owe it all to not dying. That's not particularly exciting, and I think of myself as mentally being about 18, so, right. You know, it's bit of an adjustment for me, but my lovely wife, she has gotten me a fantastic birthday present, which means I am going to go to a comic con in America in June. So I will be traveling to Heroes Con.
Oh, you lucky man, you.
Yeah, and that's in, where is it, Charlotte?
Charlotte, North Carolina. Yes, you're going to have a fantastic time there. It is an awesome convention.
Yeah, so and traveling with me will be my carer, which is Rifty. So Rifty's going to be coming along as well. James, nice. Will be joining me, just making sure that the walker doesn't get stuck in the aisle on the plane and that sort of thing, and you know, making sure I don't order the wrong foods, and you know, that I keep my sexist old-fashioned behavior in check. So it'd be good to have him with me. Mm-hmm. So yeah, we're hoping to catch up with some of the gang from the podcasting crowd and meet lots of interesting artists and people at the convention, and just party on like they do in Carolina. So I think we're going to have biscuits and gravy and stuff like that.
Sounds like it. Yep.
Yeah. I've just got to decide what to bring. What not to bring, what to buy, what to wear.
I hate to stop looking at the guest list, because I would love to go back to HeroesCon. Just having moved house, can't afford it this year. But it was like there were so many good names this year that I had to stop looking. So, but I know you will have a fantastic time there, and it's well deserved. I hope you enjoy every minute of it. And if you don't, then there's something wrong with you.
Yeah, could be, but no, I'm going to have a fantastic time. And there are some Doom Patrol-y names there. So, what is it? Joe Staton will be there. Staton. We've got Tamara Bonvillain, the colorist of the Doom Patrol, will be there, and Richard Case, both former guests of the show. They will be there. So, I will hang around them and creep them out. That'll be great.
Lots of pictures, a couple of sound bites. You know.
Yeah. Tasteful roving nudes.
Roving reporter. What?
Sorry.
Good Lord. Speaking of roving, how about we go down that way and have a look at what's happening on Darrington Way?
Sweet. So, going down Darrington Way, there's nothing. There's no news. There's very little. There's Nick did a nice picture of Mr. Fantastic to celebrate the return of the Fantastic Four, and didn't that fill up my Twitter feed? Good golly. But remarkably quiet on the Darrington Way front. It's almost like they're a little bit reluctant to talk out loud because the comic isn't coming out that much. Perhaps. And speaking of which, is that ticking that I hear, Mike?
It sure is. Let's turn around and have a look behind us, because there's the Doom Clock.
Whoa.
Right? Yeah. So yes, as we look upon the face of the mighty Doom Clock, we can see that it's been 5 weeks since we last saw the Doom Patrol in a comic, and that was Doom Patrol / Justice League of America #1, otherwise known as Part 5 of Milk Wars. which we covered in episode 119, and it saw the Patrol and the JLA take on the forces of Retcon, reboot reality, and had Rita Farr, aka Elastigirl, return to our reality. Yes! Elastigirl's back! I still don't quite understand how, but she's back. I know how she came back. You know how she came back?
Comics?
Comic book science.
Comic book science.
getting rusty. Issue 11 of Doom Patrol Volume 6 is due at this stage on April 11th of 2018.
No.
It's not? No. Oh, good.
Try the 25th of April, Mike.
The 25th of April. Right. 25th of April. I've either missed a memo or a meeting. That'll teach me to drink before we have our production meetings.
This, and let's point this out, this is the comic that leads into Milk Wars.
Yeah, yeah. So the 25th, you say. Okay, so it's now 3 weeks away still. Jesus. Right. Good times. Good times. Yeah. Okay.
Not good, is it?
Not good at all. No. But what is good is looking back at this week in Doom Patrol history, with thanks to Mike's Amazing World of Comics, going on sale for a mere $1.50 Americano on April 7th of 1992, with a cover date of May of that year, was issue 55 of Doom Patrol Volume 2. Grant Morrison, Richard Case, Stan Wach, Johnny Workman Jr., and Daniel Vozzo gave us a story entitled The Blood of the Lamb.
In which that's the weird-ass cover.
It is. It's the one in which Dorothy the Ape-Faced Girl tried to stop the Candlemaker from getting out of her, Robot Man had to find Crazy Jane to stop her from killing her father, and Tempest, a.k.a. Joshua Clay, tried to stop a bullet with his body. Oh, wait a minute. To find out which of those three plot threads actually had a successful result, check out our coverage of this issue back in episode 76 from November of 2016. And that is it for the Doom Clock this week.
Oh, good. Thanks, Mike.
Greetings, listeners. I am Dr. G, the man of nerdology. I host the Pulp to Pixel podcasts. I and my rogues gallery of co-hosts explore the media multiverse of geek culture with such shows as Welcome to Astro City and Secret Sagas of the Multiverse. Now I am proud to announce the newest addition to the Pulp to Pixel podcasts, Dial G for Gamer, a superhero gaming podcast. Dial G for Gamer will be a semi-monthly show where I and my co-hosts play and review games with a superhero theme. From tabletop games to video games, we will take on the genre one superhero game at a time. So if you love superheroes and gaming as much as we do, then tune in to Dial G for Gamer. You can find episodes of Dial G for Gamer with the other Pulp to Pixel podcasts through iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play. You can follow us on Facebook at the Pulp to Pixel Podcasts. You can follow me on Twitter at Pulp to Pixel, where I go under the name Dr. G Nerdologist. And you can find episodes directly at our blog, pulptopixel.blogspot.com.
Man, you come right out of a comic book.
The Pulp to Pixel Podcasts, exploring the media multiverse of geek culture.
He meddled in things potentially relevant.
And now it's time for Doomsplaining, where we look at Doom Patrol comics in greater detail than the rest of the show, which is a very minor distinction, but let's go with it. So today, wow, we're getting burnt again. We're looking at John Byrne issues. So we're looking at Doom Patrol Volume 4, Issue 7, and Issue 8. And Mike is going to take us through number 7. Go for it, Mike.
Okay, Issue 7 of Volume 4. Cover dated February of 2005, but actually went on sale of December 29th of 2004 for $2.50. Edited by Mike Carlin, written and penciled by John Byrne, inks by Doug Hazelwood, letters by Jared K. Fletcher and Alex Blayart on the colors. The title of this one is Who Are the Devolutionists? And that is a good question.
That's doesn't really tell you.
No, it does not. The cover's interesting. It's got the majority of the patrol fighting a giant ape.
Giant ape.
Giant ape. Yes.
How did that cover happen?
I don't know. He might have a thing for apes. Giant apes. Mm. I mean, this giant ape's holding Grunt in its hand. So, bit of ape-on-ape action there, if you'll pardon the expression. So... Anyway, previously in Volume 4 of the Doom Patrol, when we last saw this iteration of the team in Issue 6, which we covered in Episode 114 from December of 2017, the team had just uncovered an illegal underground robot fighting ring. Right. And at one point during that story, Negative Man saved a woman who was being chased by a dinosaur, which ended up vanishing somehow. And all that was left there was a bird standing where Larry expected to find the dino. Right.
Oh, yeah, probably nothing.
Probably nothing. Anyway, we open this issue, Issue 7, on Christmas Day in Harbor City, Oregon, where Mi-Sun Quan, aka Nudge, exits a taxi after arriving at an industrial site where police and firemen attempt to get an explosion under control. Searching for her fellow teammates, she finds the blue-faced boy named Vortex, who reveals that the chaos and destruction is being caused by a giant ape who used to be Rita Farr.
What?
The negative being is trying to communicate with Rita the ape, but has no luck. And the two teens notice Robot Man hunched over Larry Trainer's prone body, but as they get close, they discover that Cliff Steel has gone bestial and berserk, backhanding Nudge so that she flies backwards through the air before Vortex unleashes a vortex that knocks Robo-Beast out. As is the time-honored tradition in this run of the Doom Patrol, we are suddenly shown a flashback.
That's a good trick.
Yeah, never gets old, that one. So, we're shown a flashback to DBHQ in Kimordaz the night before, that being Christmas Eve. The team are setting up a giant Christmas tree, thanks to Rita, and even Niles Calder, the chief, joins in the festivities with a hideously god-awful plain ornament with the letters DP on it. So he adds that to their festive-looking tree. To add to the Christmas magic, despite the team being based in the Florida Keys, it starts snowing. Yay! And, of course, the chief implies that he's responsible for it somehow. Yay!
Hey.
Comic book science at its lamest. Of course, Nudge, being a grumpy teen, means that she doesn't want to join in on the fun, and as she refuses to help build a giant snowman, again, thanks to Rita, she sees a figure on the roof of the building, climbing to investigate, and commenting that she's unsure of what made her climb up there, she bumps into the Confederate soldier she's previously met. She's certain he's a ghost, he's sure that he's not, and he introduces himself as Private Elihu Washburn. Just as he asks her to join him at the camp Christmas dance, Nudge hears the chief's automated alarm system, and she's thankful for the interruption, as are we all. It turns out that ever since Larry had that dino encounter in Issue 6, the chief has had his computers scanning for similar occurrences, sightings of unusual creatures and wild animals on the loose. Amazingly, there had recently been 13 such instances. 13, wow. All seemingly random at first, until the locations are vectored and plotted and a distinct coincidence, I mean pattern, emerges. Next thing you know, the patroller in their super fancy patrol jet headed to Harbour City, which for some reason Nudge isn't too thrilled about. So as the team touches down and starts investigating, they're attacked by a dog, which transforms into a giant wolf, before a trio of velociraptors attack them. But both attacks are short-lived as the dog reverts back to normal size and the three dinos turn back into birds. As Rita attempts to track the energy signature of the creatures, the team zoom off in their fancy new Doom Wagon, although only Vortex notices that Nudge has wandered off. She's actually gone to find a payphone where she calls her old home. The phone is answered by her mother first, who seems very concerned for me, son, before Nudge's brother, possibly adopted, the brother Gary, grabs the phone to berate Mi-san for daring to make contact. Upset by this turn of events, Nudge berates herself for trying to make contact, just like Gary said, with her old life as she runs off down the street. She is stopped, however, by a TV news article showing in a store window about superpowered beings fighting prehistoric monsters at the old Chelsea refinery. And showing the second sign of possibly a very bad memory, Nudge exclaims, "Holy crap, it's the Doom Patrol!" And she flags down a taxi. Alright, so we're getting back to where we came in. Yeah. At the refinery, the patrol seem to have the upper hand of the dinos, but they fail to notice two bald men dressed in black, strange clothes, pointing a strange weapon at them and blasting them with strange rays, an effect which turns Robot Man berserk and Rita into a giant ape. As Vortex tries to figure out what to do now that the team are in disarray, we cut away to the two strange men now talking to their leader in some hidden location. A grey-skinned man with a skull cap standing before a series of bizarre consoles. "Is this truly what you intended to have happen, my lord?" one of the men asks, to which Grayskin replies, "My plan is a fluid thing, friend. This time is so distant from my own, I cannot be certain of precise events, but I am certain that my victory is assured." Meanwhile, we finally caught up to when Nudge arrived at the refinery. Rita the giant ape hurls a tank at the girl and Vortex, who saves them by blasting the oncoming object with a vortex. But he's then knocked out cold after expending so much energy. Freaking out and unsure about what to do, Nudge recalls that Justice Leaguer Faith, remember her, Paul?
Yeah.
The 10th Circle?
Yeah.
Justice Leaguer Faith told Nudge that she could use her quote-unquote mental powers to call on them for help. And so she tries reaching out, hoping that even if the JLA are on the moon, someone will hear her cry and come to help. And surprise, someone does hear her mental call. The Martian Manhunter. And double surprise, Jean Jones has been turned into a berserk ape. Oh no.
Oh dear.
What did you think?
Sorry.
What did you think of issue 7, Paul?
Well, I'll say this nice about it. I mean, it's good art, good burn and Hazelwood art. I actually liked the start. It was really punchy until it did that stupid "let's have a it's forward in the story, let's flashback." Because it opens with a bang. You know, like it's, you know, giant gorilla fighting action, which is quite welcome in a comic. I mean, it's a good way to start a comic.
Yep.
But Byrne is just obsessed with jumping back and forwards for no real reason. There's no benefit to it. There's no logic to it. It's
no.
And it's, you know, if you do it four times in a row, it's boring. It's really boring. And it's, you know, I mean, is he out of tricks? Is he out of ideas? I mean,
I think so. This is issue 7, and it's a really boring trick.
Yeah, and like, gorillas, you know, we've got a four-armed gorilla in the comic, let's draw some more gorillas. And, you know, I was eye-rolling when Rita got turned into gorilla and her clothes rip off. Because, he's setting up her being naked later in the story, which, maybe that won't be the case, perhaps. But, I don't know. And the villain is just cryptic and he is unnamed throughout this story. You know, like, who are the devolutionists? They're not even named in the comic, so we don't know.
We don't
know. Telling us.
They barely make it. I think they're in like half a dozen panels all up, if that.
Yeah. And I read the next issue, and you could call that Who Are the Devolutionists too, because you still don't know at the end of that one. So, yeah.
Who Are the Devolutionists Part 2.
I'm not a fan. What about you, Mike?
I will concur. I'm not a fan either. I will agree with you. The art is good. The art looks fine. Can't fault that. The story itself just seems... I'm so over the flashback trick. It's happened far too many times now. It's like, just either get on with the story or, you know, find something else to do. I'm also really worried about what looks like Nudge's failing memory. And I can't believe I'm worried about it, but it's like twice in the one issue. It's like, hey, I've just seen this shadowy figure up on the roof of our building. Oh, I wonder what's calling me to climb all this way to the wall. I don't remember what. Oh, that's right. It's that old Confederate ghost that I've met a couple of times already. That's right. And then when she's running away from her disastrous phone call home and she sees the news report on, hey, there's these superpowered beings, you know, fighting dinosaurs. And she's kind of like, oh, wait a minute. That's the Doom Patrol. That's who I'm with. I was like, really?
How
bad is this girl's memory?
And the family stuff with her. It's like she rings up. Her mum is nice to her. Her brother isn't. And that's enough for her to run away from the phone and go, oh, no. You know. Like, has she never had a sibling before?
Well, Gary, her brother, appears adopted. He looks like he's Caucasian, whereas it was Mi-san and her mum both look Asian in appearance. So maybe Gary was a late arrival. I don't know. It's like, you know how in Volume 6, Jared Way drops something new in and it gets followed up eventually later on?
Yeah.
This is just clunked in, and it doesn't even hold my interest that much. It's like, oh god, it's a family, okay, whatever.
But it makes her look like a weak character that, you know, she can't handle a negative little brother.
No, she cannot.
Yeah,
and she forgets about her ghost friend, and she forgets what her team is there to do.
Somehow. Yeah, and is it meant to build pathos around her? Because it just makes her look, you know, pathetic.
Yeah.
So, Anyway.
Anyway, sure, after that glowing review, tell us about issue 8.
Okay. So, issue 8, it covered dated March 2005, but actually came out in January 26th to Australia Day in 2005.
Nice.
$2.50, which is way too much. edited by Mike Carlin, written by John Byrne, inked by Doug Hazelwood, and penciled by John Byrne, and lettered by Jared K. Fletcher. What the K stands for. And coloured by Alex Blayart. And it has a cover of a giant robot man trying to eat tiny Rita, it looks like. And robot man's face looks like it's made of wood or something.
A little bit. I think it's meant to be like a reflective, shiny metal. I actually don't mind the cover. I think it's kind of cool, this one.
It's one of the more dramatic, and it is different to the the sort of team action shots we were getting earlier.
Yes. So,
yeah, right. I'll give it a bit of slack, this one. It's a nice cover by John. All right.
I swear, if there's a time jump in this issue, I swear.
Our story opens a bit before the stuff that happened earlier.
Damn it.
John Johns, the Martian Manhunter, was on his own in the JLL Watchtower. Probably because his family are all dead and Superman and the rest never invited him to Christmas dinner. His lonely vigil is disturbed by the mental touch reaching out to him. It prompts him to leave his post and explain his actions as he walks across the room to the teleporter and explain what he's doing the whole way. I don't know why. And he teleports close to the source of the mental touch, which is Harbor City. And he immediately gets zapped somehow and turns into a rampaging green gorilla. A gorilla, again. Yeah. Nudge appears, and then she tries to appeal to his civilized nature, which isn't there at this time, and she almost gets smashed, but Larry's energy being snatches her out of the way and up into the sky. And then the unnamed villain's henchmen, they retreat from the battle and stumble across Larry's prone body, and randomly decide to zap him with their weird weapon that the unnamed boss gave them, which is a really douchey move. And Larry turns from a prone gimp man into a prone ape man, and his gimp mask breaks open. And then these two scumbags are blasted away by Vortex, who restrains the unconscious assholes and takes their weapon to show the chief. Meanwhile, giant naked gorilla Rita resumes her human form, giving John Byrne an opportunity to draw her naked, just slightly covered with hair. Well done, John. Well done. Well earned. And she does a nutty dash to find a used tissue to fashion into unhygienic clothing. yeah, good one. And she almost gets stomped by a rampaging Cliff Steele, who thinks he's a gorilla. And Rita attempts to reason with Cliff, and so he eats her, which is not cool in a team situation. No. And Rita imbingens herself just in time to break Cliff's head in half, then carries his thrashing lower half away, in search of her other teammates, such as Negative Man. The aforementioned Negative Man is still buzzing around the Gorilla Martian Manhunter, or Martian Gorilla Hunter at this point, maybe, when he suddenly reverts to a Manhunter. Good. And they all agree that something weird is going on, and they are interrupted by the chief, who tells them something weird is going on. The team decide to track down the unnamed villain behind the shenanigans. Like, we still don't know this bloody name of this villain at this point. No. Yeah, and they John does some mind reading of his underlings, which he explains way too much, and uses his hands to mind read for some reason. But he finds out where they should go to find the unnamed mastermind behind all this crap. So the team returns to the Doom Patrol transport, and they contact the chief, who has scanned the weapon that Vortex has confiscated and shows it to be actually devoid of functionality. It's an empty shell, like this story. Their path to the evil mastermind is blocked by dinosaurs and gorilla people. Let's draw more dinosaurs and gorilla people. And Vortex and Nudge slip through to confront the villain, who zaps them. Oh, they had such a good plan just to walk in there. sorry. Nudge, who now we can call Nudge the Eight-Faced Girl, she lashes out at the unaffected Vortex, who has a mask that falls off, because it was apparently a mask, which we never knew. And Vortex, we never see his face, but apparently it's disturbing, and he says that he causes people to go completely mad. That would be a nice change in this story. But the inhuman villain, I still don't know his name, is unaffected. As Rita and Cliff bust into the base, Vortex is able to blast the villain and rips his suit open, and it appears it's just an empty husk of a costume. So the team all convene on Larry's body, no longer in ape form. But as the negative energy tries to return, it suddenly shoots straight up in the sky with no sign of stopping, and Rita stoops to examine Larry and is shocked to discover he's dead. Now, I would be much happier if John Byrne explained a little bit more about the villain and what he was up to, and less about, like, stupid stuff, like when they land their plane. You know, John Byrne manages to put in explanation. Oh, we can park here because the Doom Patrol owns different areas of the, you know, airports around the world. And
stuff. Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Who cares?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, John Byrne's sit there. Oh, it really bugs me when teams fly somewhere and then they just park and no one ever explains why they're allowed to park there. Mm-hmm. I'll fix that. I'm gonna write the story that explains that. Goes, oh, thank goodness for that. You know, this foolproof story now is so watertight.
And also, yeah, John's over-explaining everything he does.
Everything. Yeah, like, he's like, I'm pushing my chair out and standing up, and now I'm walking across the room. You know, it's almost at that level.
Yes. I shall use the Justice League teleporter to travel to the closest receiving unit and cover the rest of the distance by my own means. In other words,
yeah,
I'm going to beam down to Earth and then fly the rest of the way. Yeah, thanks, John.
Yeah.
Like, really? Yeah,
but he's not even going, like, he wants to explain that, like, there isn't a teleporter really close, so he's got to go to the nearest one and then fly the rest of the way.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, good. that makes the story better.
What's going on?
Yeah.
Why is this in this comic?
Yeah.
What happened to John Byrne?
And yeah, giant nude Reza, completely unnecessary.
Yeah. Adds nothing. And he didn't even go for it. Like, if he was going to be a massive sleaze bag, he never really, you know, he didn't put in 100%, you know?
Well, I'm glad he didn't. But then
he
goes the other... He still manages to add a bit more grossness to it by having her find a discarded tissue.
Yeah.
That, you know, that might do the trick if I can tear off a snot-free corner. Well, good luck to you, Rita. I hope that miniature Rita doesn't get someone's booger on her tiny body.
Snot-free corner was my old neighbourhood. This comic, it's so passionless and clinical.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you look at the original 60s run of the Doom Patrol, and it was nuts. Like, it was just silly. Like, there was all sorts of silly crap going on, and it was magnificent.
Yes.
You know, and there were so many great ideas, and everyone monologued and introduced themselves, and, you know, you had something to roll around in your head. And at the end of this, you go, we've had two issues, and there's just some villain. We don't know what he wanted, don't know who he is. He's never had his name said in this comic.
Nope.
And he's boring. He's boring. And he's just another boring villain for the Doom Patrol to fight in this volume. It's like the boring Olympics, and we're at the, you know, we're nearly at the finals because it's just getting more and more boring. It's, you know, such, you know, finely tuned boredom at this point.
So,
yeah.
From what I can figure out.
Other than that, I love it.
Yeah, because from what I can figure out, the villain traveled back in time and had to devolve people further to get some victory over someone or something. Yeah, you're right. It's never explained. He's never given a name or any logic behind his mission. It's like, whereas in the 60s run, like, even if a villain appeared for just one issue, you knew their name and what they were up to and why most of the times. A lot more than these two issues have given us.
And they were interesting and different and crazy.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And no one ever stopped to explain how they could park the plane.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Mm.
Well, the good news is we only have 10 more issues of Volume 4 to get through.
Oof. Oof. That's going to fly by.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, not a great addition to the legacy of the Patrol.
No.
And fairly standard stuff for Volume 4, unfortunately.
Substandard.
Yeah.
Actually, no, it's all been pretty bad. But now there's a rhythm to the badness, you know? It's
a cha-cha rhythm. I think it's a cha-cha where you do two steps back and then one forward or something like that. I'm trying to be cool and explain. Yeah, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Baboon cha-cha.
Step in poop.
And then step back, and then step forward again, and more poop. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know about you, but I'm all doomsplained out, dude.
I am too.
All right. Let's move on.
Yep. Harsh but fair.
And now it's time for the Mailbag of Doom. But before we get to the question of the week, we are going to listen to Paul tell us about an iTunes review we got.
Yeah. We've been hit with another iTunes review, and this one came from a mysterious person called the Old Fashioned Outlaw, and they said, 5 stars, after recently finding the Waiting for Doom podcast, I spent the next month catching up on past episodes. I am now happy to say that I am now caught up and listening to new episodes released every other Thursday. This show, much like the Adventures of the Patrol, is filled with absurdity, but the hosts, Garv and Flanger, are kept in check by Wilfred. So that was a great review. Oh. And I don't know who you are, Old Fashioned Outlaw, but I suspect, you know, it's
part of your mysterious identity that we don't know your name. Who was that old-fashioned outlaw? But if you want to tell us your name, you can do this via Twitter or send us an email or anything. You can have a Doom Patrol Waiting for Doom postcard exclusive, and one of us will autograph it. You know, you could get lucky and get me. You could get Mike. It's a bit of a lottery. Anyway,
I have a funny feeling that old-fashioned outlaw might be Jack Rocha.
Oh, really?
Yes, who has only recently started contributing to Question of the Week responses.
Oh, okay, sweet. Yeah. If it is you, Jack, if it is you, let us know. We want to send you a postcard.
Yeah.
You've earned it. Yeah. And I got a piece of physical mail. Yes, ooh, I did.
Let's get physical.
Yeah. This came from the Irredeemable Shag, and he said, "Hi, Paul. I found this Doom Patrol pin in a drawer full of things I haven't closely reviewed in probably 20 years. The copyright is 1987, so I assume it was a freebie in a comic shop to coincide with the launch of the Kupperberg Lytle series. I thought it should be in the collection of someone who will give it the proper love and respect. If you already own one, please pay it forward and give it to another Doom Patrol fan." No, I'm not going to pay it forward. I don't have it, so I'm keeping it. So it's a nice little, it's a little black pin that's a badge, as we would say in Australia. Pin, badge? Would you say badge or pin?
I'd probably say, well, I'd have to see it. You'll have to post a picture of it.
I will. Yes.
I'd probably call it a badge.
It says the Doom Patrol. It's a standard, you know, small DC badge of the day. And he says, "All the best, and throw another shrimp on the Barbie," from the Irredeemable Shag. And he did an illegible signature, which is good. I wonder who he got to write the letter for him. Yeah, so thank you very much. I think that's awesome. And I didn't have it, and now I have one. And I'll do a little – here's a little play of Shag going to the shop to post it. "Oh, yeah, I know. I'll post this badge for Paul. He'll love that." And he goes down the shop, and he puts in a little envelope, and he takes it to the post office. "I want to send this to Australia." And they go, "Oh, that'll be $15, thanks, Shag." And he went, "Cool, blimey." And he did it anyway. So
wow. Thank you so much. Well done, Shag.
Well, yeah. Yeah, well, this is the getting raped at the post office. Rifty was raped at the parking meters in Brisbane. So thank you very much for that very expensive and thoughtful gift. And I'm so sorry you had to pay that much. I feel dreadful about that.
You'll feel dreadful, but you'll look stylish.
I will.
Yeah. That's the important thing.
Yes. Anyway, on to the question of the week responses. And this time we were asking people, who is your favorite loner character in comics? That's loner as in alone, not loner as in being lent. Just wanted to make that clear. We heard on the Facebook, we heard from Jared Driscoll, who said, "The Golden Age Aquaman. He didn't have a Golden Age Aqualad to hold him back." Oh, the mysterious Golden Age Aquaman.
Yes. Gotham Sheeran chimed in on the Facebook with John Constantine. Teaming up with him is bad for life, limb, and soul. Fair call.
Very true. Very true. And we heard from a mysterious Zawisa, to Doug Zawisa, who we know fairly well, so he's not that mysterious. He said, "The question, the Vic Sage version, he's a bit more lonery than Rene Montoya." Good call. Yes, he is.
Rifty at Rift 1821. Said, "Simplest question of the week ever with only one true correct answer, which is, of course, Silver Surfer. Hashtag mic drop. Hashtag I win." Yeah, and then I managed to cough up a bit of artwork showing the Surfer and Dawn, I think her name is, riding around in space. So, not that alone, James.
A high five on that one, Mike.
Thanks.
We heard from Ryan Daly from all the Ryan Daly podcasts, like Give Me That Podcast and Podcast the Podcasting Hour, and there's others, aren't there?
Fatherhood the Podcast.
Yeah.
Help Me Put My Child to Sleep with a Bedtime Story, the podcast.
Yeah. He does all the podcasts. Anyway, he said, "Spider-Man and Hulk have been on teams before, but they don't belong. They should be loners. But I think the ultimate loner in comics would be Jonah Hex."
Okay.
Yeah. He's an ornery bastard who doesn't fit in well.
Sean42AZ, or AZ, depending on where you're from, chimed in with Longshot, and a pic of Longshot and his bad hair and his glowing eye. Yeah, I wasn't expecting that one. That's a good one.
obscure. Dr. Ange 70, or Ange as we call him, he said, can you be a loner in the Legion, the biggest super team in comics? I think it's a rhetorical question because he says, yes, I give you the lone wolf who became Timberwolf. And he showed us Timberwolf.
Right.
Yeah, he wasn't the super biggest player in the team, was he?
No. Well, what would I know? I'm just agreeing with you. I've never read any Legion stuff. Come on, you know that.
Yeah. Cool.
Jeffrey Brown at To See Jugo said, I would say Savage Dragon.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I haven't read that since like the fourth issue.
Same. Yeah.
Yeah. Chris, aka Peapod, he said, Constantine. Another vote for Constantine. Yeah.
Good choice. Craig 101 at Craig R. McD chimed in with Spider Jerusalem.
Oh, yeah. Nice choice.
That's a good one.
From Transmit. Yeah. We have from Moby-1 at Moby-1, and he said, bit of a cheat as they are comic adaptations from novels, but my favourite literary loners are Elric of Melbourne. No, Melnibone. Melnibone?
Eric of Melbourne.
Eric of Melbourne. And Conan the Barbarian. Michael Moorcock's Eric.
Eric of Melbourne from the western suburbs. Yep. Eric the Bogan. Oh,
sorry.
Fractastic at Fractures said, every single comic character has a supporting cast, so I'm not sure anyone can be called a loner. Having said that, Judge Dredd. He does have the other judges, but doesn't really have any friends, so maybe loner applies.
Good call, Frack. Mm. Mm. Tim Price, Tim Price 17, that's the price of Tim 17. He said, Spider-Woman managed to be even more of a loner while on the same team as Spider-Man. Mm. When they were on the same team. She had a baby, didn't she? Is that one?
That's who I imagine he means. That it could have been the Spider-Verse event. They were on a team together, but she was still kind of off doing her own thing. Yeah,
I don't know. Anyway.
At Coffin Comics Blog, Clinton said, John Constantine, Moon Knight, Doctor Strange, and the Simonson era Manhunter. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Although
that's the Wolf, Simonson.
Doctor Strange, he had, who was it? Clea? And,
Wong.
Wong. Yeah, he had Wong. So.
And the Defenders.
Yeah. Yeah. So, sorry, Clinton. I'm going to strike that one.
We heard from Abel Padzilla, and he said, that's a tough question. I remember when Spider-Man used to be a loner character. Now he and everyone else seem to be part of a supergroup. That's true.
It is a tough question, Paul. Well done. Well done.
Oh, good. Glad I stumped you all.
Jack Rocha, or Rocker, please let us know which is a correct pronunciation, Jack. He's at Old Fashioned Outlaw.
Could be Rocha.
Rocha, yeah. Jack said, my favorite loner character is Dr. Fate. He is there when needed, but prefers to operate solo. Best of all, he decides when he is needed. Okay.
Hmm. He is a bit of a loner, except when he's merged with the two people.
Yeah. Or when he turns up in a big DC event and just magically saves the day.
When Batman
in front of all the other heroes. Yes, because when Batman has to use a payphone to contact him. Yeah, that doesn't boil my blood at all. Anyway, who else did we hear from, Paul?
We heard from someone called Jason W. Hello, Jason. We have not heard from you before. And his name on Twitter is JasonWW3, so which he wants to start a world war. And he said, the question, another vote for the question. A bit of a loner there, yeah. Mm. Yeah. So I guess I've got to come up with an answer.
Yeah.
I think the biggest loner in comics is clearly the Blue Power Ranger.
What?
I don't have to explain that. It's self-explanatory.
No, you think you should explain that.
Oh, all right. I'm joking. I'm actually, right. I'm I'm messing with you, Mike. I'm going to say Judge Dredd. Bloody Frack stole me answer.
Ah, bloody Frack.
Gosh. Yeah. Troublemaker. Mm. What about you, Mike? What have you got?
I'm going to go with The Crow from James O'Barr.
Oh, nice. Cool.
Yeah, because it's you could say The Crow's his companion. It's like, no, not really. Once that tortured soul brought back to life, they're just on their own quest for vengeance, pretty much.
Yeah, except for the Crow and Friends series.
Doesn't exist. Do not.
Oh, dear.
Good grief.
Oh, I guess that's that for the mailbag, but should we do an episode next week?
No, let's do some DCOCD next week.
Okay, yeah, good idea. We'll hit the 90s and we'll do some Armageddon 2001. And then how about we come back for some John Arcudi Doom Patrol after that? So,
I like it. I like it.
Yeah, we'll do Volume 3, 11 and 12. Good, we just decided this on the spot.
Yes.
Not written down in front of us.
Not at all. And do we have a question of the week for the next Waiting for Doom?
Oh, bloody oath we do. It's, who is your favourite cyborg? Cyborg. So
right.
It could be, you know, a cyborg in the comics, could be a cyborg in the romance novels and the ones in the movies. It could be my mum has a cochlear ear implant. Does that make her a cyborg?
Does it do anything fancy?
Shoots lasers. Oh, no, it's a laser eye vision stuff.
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah.
So maybe not.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. She wouldn't be my favourite anyway. but if you want to get in touch with us with your cyborg answer, what's the name of that cyborg in the Titans? I can never remember. Anyway, you can send your responses to Twitter at Waiting for Doom. No, at WFDpod. Get that right. We have email options at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. There's the Facebook page on Facebook, which is called Waiting for Doom on Facebook. And what's the other one? My Greatest Adventure 80.blogspot.com, which is Doug's excellent website. And he's just caught up. He's done all these posts and finally caught up. And so he's probably not going to welcome this episode dropping. yeah,
thanks.
So check
and sorry,
out.
Doug.
Yeah. Thanks, Doug. Sorry. Yeah. But thanks for joining us. We will be back in a couple of weeks with more Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom.